It's Thanksgiving week, and that means many of us are packing our bags, double-checking our flights, and preparing to gather with family to cook and, of course, to eat. But not all Americans have the same type of access to nutritional food. In fact, in 2017, roughly 40 million Americans didn't have enough money or resources to feed their family. That's 12% of all Americans. For Black households, that number jumps to 22%. For Hispanic households, it's 18%. And while the majority of farm workers in the United States are people of color, 95% of farm owners in the U.S. are white. Takeaway producer Rob Gunther recently spent some time at a farm in upstate New York where a group of food activists of color are working to challenge this disparity. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Tanzina.
So tell me about this farm. What was it that made you interested in heading up there?
So I heard about this farm. It's owned and operated by young farm workers of color. And I know that when I think about where I get my food from, it's so easy to take for granted the fact that we can just go to the grocery store, get whatever we need, and never think about it again. But I know that's not true for so many people. And when I heard about Soulfire Farm and what they're trying to do, it really made me question these questions of who we think of when we say American farmers. You know, so many times we hear about the government giving subsidies to farmers. The president will get out there and say, we're going to help our farmers in trade wars and tariffs. And without even thinking about it, this image comes to mind. And I think the image for a lot of people is of a white person farming. So Soulfire Farm, it's about a half hour outside of Albany. They work on 7 acres of land, growing all sorts of vegetables. They raise chickens. And I made the trip up there on a rainy Saturday morning in October.
So you get up there, it's harvest season, right? What are they farming?
When I was there, they were taking up these giant sweet potatoes.
Since we're digging up the sweet potatoes, it doesn't matter if this stuff is pierced. We already mowed most of it, so we don't have to worry about the vines themselves.
And this is all happening right, you know, right outside of New York City. It was fascinating.
So you talked to Leah Penniman, and she's the co-founder of Soulfire Farms. Let's listen to what she had to say.
We are a people of color-led community farm that's dedicated to ending racism and injustice in the food system.
That sounds like a pretty ambitious thing to want to do. How are they going about doing that?
It is ambitious. It's a huge project. And I think that Leah, the way she described it, they tailor it to three specific focuses.
The first is to grow food in a sustainable Afro-Indigenous manner on 7 acres and provide that food to over 400 members in our community who otherwise would not have access. The second thing is education. We're trying to train up the next generation of Black and Brown farmers. So we have thousands of folks roll through here for our training programs, almost all of whom go on to take leadership in the food system. And the third and final project that we're working on is reparations of land and resources. We all know that we're on stolen lands and that this economy was built on the stolen labor of Black and Brown bodies. And so we work regionally and nationally on policy shifts to return the stolen land and wealth to the descendants of those from whom it was taken.
What they're really trying to address is the question of access to food. And even more than that, they're trying to address like how this agriculture system reflects the same racial disparities that we see across any other American institution.
That's what strikes me as so interesting, the philosophy behind what they're trying to do and who they're trying to encourage to get involved in farm work.
I think for these farmers, and they are all young people of color, I think they look out in the world and you can kind of see how race impacts every aspect of life. And food is something that, because so many of us take it for granted, I think it's easy not to see the injustice there. But the injustice is there. I talked to assistant farm manager Damaris Miller. She told me that this was a big driver of her getting into agriculture in the first place.
One of the challenges in our community that gets really invisibilized, diet-related illness and disease is the leading cause of death amongst Black folks, especially in communities of color. And so if Black Lives Matter, then eating nutritious food has to matter too.
You know, when you go to visit Soulfire Farm, there's volunteers when I went there. There were community members stopping by to drop off homemade jars of jam. Besides from just attracting people, in terms of actually giving young people the technical training that they're going to need to make agriculture a career, I talked to people like Ceci Pineda, who before this was living in New York City, and Letitia Wyatt from South Carolina.
I've done a program here. Soulfire runs these programs called the Black and Latinx Farmers Immersions, expanded to include other people of color, but who are interested in learning more, deepening their farming skills, or I've realized for a lot of people, it's also going deeper into food justice and they start to work on other issues. Maybe it's policy or working on like community nutrition, community health.
I did the Black and Latinx Farmers Immersion 2 years ago.
and that's what got me started farming. I'm definitely still continuing my education, and we do so much work around acknowledging Afro-Indigenous roots in farming. Social inequality produces health inequalities in different populations of people.
So, Rob, what your reporting is showing, basically, is that there's a big disconnect between who's eating food and who's growing food.
Exactly. And, you know, to better understand that gap, I sat down with Soulfire Farms co-founder, Leah Penniman, who you heard back at the top of this interview. And she started it out by explaining how Soulfire got its start.
Soulfire Farm, the land itself, chose us in 2006. And then we spent about 4 years building the house, building up the soil, which was badly degraded, the barn and so on. So we opened Soulfire and moved here onto this land in 2010. When I started farming, and I was all about it because it seemed like the perfect intersection of social justice and environmental justice, I would go to all these farming conferences, and the presenters were white, mostly white men. All the books were written by white folks. So I really believed that organic farming was invented by Europeans, and I started to feel like a race traitor and felt pulled to other causes. You know, maybe I should get involved in housing issues or police violence. And all of those are crucial issues. I'm not in any way diminutizing them. But there's really a big myth that Black and brown folks' only relationship to agriculture has been through enslavement and sharecropping and not through tens of thousands of years of noble innovation in agriculture. And so a big part of writing Farming While Black was to debunk that and to really show the ways that we have made significant contributions to sustainable farming over time, and that we do have a rightful place of belonging to the land and on the land.
One thing that jumped out from the book is that you talk about how Black farm ownership has decreased from 14 to 2% since the 1920s. What accounts for this? What mm-hmm. brought us to this, to that decline?
So such a powerful question. You know, Malcolm X talked about all revolution is based on land. Land is the basis of freedom, justice, and equality. And so we know that land certainly provides sustenance, but land also provides a sense of ownership and self-determination. When Black pastors got together in 1865, you know, right after the Emancipation Proclamation, the Union Army asked them, "What is it that you most need?" And they said, "We need the ground and homes upon the ground so we can plant fruit trees and say to our children, these are ours." So there's a psycho-spiritual component as well as a material component. And I don't think any of your listeners would agree that it's right for 98% of the rural land in this country to be owned by white people when we're a half, you know, people of color country. And so there's a huge disparity. And if you think about what was happening in the late 1800s, early 1900s, it's really astounding that Black folks amassed 16 million acres of land, or 14% of the nation's farmland. I mean, people were tenant farmers and sharecroppers saving up their Sunday money to buy this land against all odds. And as Black farmland ownership increased, it became a threat to white supremacists in the South who wanted to maintain the economy as it was. So Black farmers were targeted with over 4,000 lynchings. There were cross burnings. There were people literally driven out of their home, in addition to government discrimination, because the USDA farm programs are operated on the county level by the very same people who are doing these cross burnings. So if you went to get a loan, or you went for some crop insurance or for technical assistance, time and again, you'd be denied. In the early 1980s, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights declared that the U.S. Department of Agriculture was the number one driver of Black land loss and would be to blame for the extinction of the Black farmer.
So you wrote this book. What are you calling the next generation to do? How do you go from 2% back to a higher number?
Well, I think the part that we need to take responsibility for as Black farmers is healing from the legacy of inherited trauma, of all the oppression we've experienced on land. So this book really uses we language for the returning generation of Black farmers. It's about learning our noble history, overcoming our fears, trying it out, accessing the resources that we have, and engaging in mutual aid. That's our responsibility. I think it's the job of white America and the rest of the United States in general to really take the boot off our necks, because we still have disparities in terms of how government money is distributed by race to farmers. We still have food apartheid, which is a legacy of redlining, where your zip code essentially determines your access to everything, your education, your housing, your food. And we still have the exploitation of farm workers. And so we need to make substantive policy change, corporate change, so that we as Black and brown farmers, we're ready to go, so that we have the resources and we have the ability to go ahead and make our dreams come true.
That was Takeaway producer Rob Gunther in conversation with Leah Penniman, co-founder of Soulfire Farm in Grafton, New York, and author of Farming While Black. Rob, thanks for bringing us that story.
Thanks, Tanzina.